Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth. Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Hi, everyone. How are you today? Oh, today, welcome to A Taste of Ink Live. And our guest is author Amy Leah Murphy. She is a former attorney, and the author of Fine. Fine is a young adult mystery novel about one girl's search for answers to why her sister vanished and what it really means to be fine. A survivor of many things, including cancer, Amy Leah has dedicated her life to bringing light into the darkest moments. She enjoys writing about life-changing moments that unearth the resilient beauty of the human spirit in the hopes it empowers her readers to embrace life and all of its messiness. When she isn't writing, she can be found dancing and singing in the car with the windows down, or walking along the beach, or eating warm cookies. I like that one. She currently lives in Southern California with her husband and three children. So I am so happy today to welcome author Amy Leah Murphy. Amy, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
And let me know, am I pronouncing your name right? Because I keep saying Amy Leah, and I want to say Amelia. Or
I know. It's a tough one. It's actually Amy Lee, which is, it escapes everyone.
Okay, so I got it now. So Amy Lee, okay, that's easy to remember. So how are you today? Are you enjoying the California weather?
I sure am. We had a bit of wind the other day that was pretty crazy, so today's a nice sunny day.
Oh, gosh, that's good. Sunny here in Arizona, too. I really enjoyed it today. We've had some really... We had those days that are so great, it makes you forget that it's going to be hot in a few weeks.
Oh, I'm sure. And yeah, I bet everyone listening from all those areas where it's cold is a little bit jealous, which I've lived there, so
oh,
I know.
Of course. Yeah, of course. We were trying to plan a little getaway, like a weekend getaway, and every place we thought about was like, it's cold. No, it's raining. No, it's storms here. We did hit on Louisiana. We're like, oh, perfect, 70 degrees. And it was like humidity, 70%. We're like, yeah, no, that's not going to work either. So we're in Arizona for our little getaway.
I think that's probably a good move.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. I think we're going to have to wait a few more weeks before we can have our little weekend getaway, so... But I really started reading Fine, and I'm really enjoying it. It's a great read, and so let's talk about it. Let's hear from you the synopsis for Fine.
Okay, yeah, Fine is basically, you know, a story about a girl, Katie Williams, who is about to embark on adulthood, but is just held back. She's just really trapped in the past because of this terrible event that happened with her sister. And so as she's, you know, trying to make sense of herself and her future, she ends up looking into the missing persons file for her sister, which includes interviews and police files, excerpts from Anna's diary, text messages, all kinds of pieces of evidence, basically. And so the reader kind of goes along with Katie and reads through the file with her, kind of unearthing, you know, more of what was really going on with her sister in the months before she disappeared. So it's kind of a fun approach. I call it kind of a kaleidoscope, you know, where you're kind of looking through all these different lenses and perspectives and really getting to know more about what was really going on with this girl and how her, you know, this tragic moment really impacted the community around her and especially her sister.
Okay. So now in reading, I'll talk about the first part when I was reading, where you're really describing some of what Katie's going through in the first part of the book. So where did you get the inspiration or do the research on your character development?
You know, the story came to me years ago because, life is so filled with, I always joke that I don't write fantasy or science fiction or anything because life is just too interesting to me. There's too much juice in regular life. And when I came up with the idea of writing Fine, it was because, and, you know, the couple different places I lived, these terrible things happened. And, you know, these young people, you know, were either taking their own lives or they were passing from, you know, things related to addiction, and just a variety of different terrible, tragic circumstances. And it really affected me, and it affected our entire community. And what I was so struck by was the response of all the adults around me was just dumbfounded. Like, how could this possibly happen? How is this happening when from the outside, you know, these kids look like they have everything. Everything's great. Mm-hmm. They're fine. They're perfect. And, you know, what do they have to complain about, right? Why are they falling into these terrible situations? And that just sort of sowed the seeds for me way back then. And from that point forward, it kind of rolled around in my head. And, you know, I interact with a lot of teenagers, so I'm always pressing them for information and talking with them. And that sort of just evolved, you know, the characters just came to me from that point and just took on a life of their own. And then it was just a matter of getting to know their particular story.
Well, I like, one of the things that I like, and you say you have three kids as well. Are any of those teenagers?
Yes, my oldest is now 14.
Okay, yeah, and I made my, and I was thinking it's teen years is funny. It's kind of, it's between being frustrated and hilarious.
And, yeah.
you know, it's like, true. It's that, and it's really funny because my kids are very spaced far apart. So I went through adolescence three times. And it was kind of funny, you know, each one was very different. And I remember my son saying to me that he was never going to send me through that after his sister. And I was like, yeah, don't lie to me. Just don't lie to me. But you're right. Yep. I was telling my daughter that teens are, you know, they're a very unique age. And it's kind of funny when you named your book Fine. And I was reading some of the information. I said, yeah, that's kind of a thing that they say, but it's not always true. It's not always in the context and perspective that parents think it is.
Exactly. And I think it becomes code for leave me alone.
Yeah.
Don't ask me any more questions. I want to be left alone. I got this. You know, that's it. I'm fine. And it's funny because we do it as adults as well. It's just so much more pronounced and, you know, sometimes dangerous when you're, you know, still in your younger years. But I love, it's funny you mentioned that about adolescence because I love writing about that period of time because it is so pivotal. And when you're going through it, it's such a roller coaster ride and you're just full of ups and downs and you're strapped to it. So there's no choice, right? You're going through it and like your son, it's funny. Like, oh no, I'm going to be totally different. And then, you know, we all go through it and it happens the way it happens. But I think those are such great moments, right? Where you have all these first, you know, experiences and you're just really tasting independence and crafting like the human you're going to become. And I think all of us can look back on those first moments or those initial ideas and beliefs that we started, you know, just growing that have now blossomed into this, you know, this full life. And I think it's just such a special time that sometimes we get so, you know, taken down by the insanity of that period that we forget about the beauty within it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I agree with you there. It is, it's just really an awesome time. Now, my granddaughter is just 13, and it's been so fun. It's been fun.
I bet from that angle.
Oh, my God. It's fun because, and I, you know, sometimes her mother will talk to me. I'm like, I'm like, you shouldn't have a hard time with that conversation because that's you. I'm so happy I'm at this point in my life, you know. But it's an honor, you know, when your kids do come to you as a parent and talk to you and, you know, or still talk to you no matter what's going on. I think it's a real honor when your kids do that. One of the things I want to ask you, so how did you come from being a attorney to writing books? What was your moment that you decided you know, this is something I want to do rather than be an attorney?
You know, I had always wanted to write, but for some reason I just got onto this entirely different track. And you know how tracks go. You just kind of, they pick up momentum. And the next thing you know, you look up and you think, wow, how did all that time pass? You know, how did I get here? And I was going through a lot of different things, and I had started writing for, you know, the joy of it, and because I had all these stories that just wouldn't let me alone, so I had to get them out of me. And right. I was sort of playing around with the idea for a while, but then I got sick. I was diagnosed with cancer a few years ago, and that was obviously pretty life-changing, and one of the things that came out of that healing journey was the realization that, like, this is what I want to do. This is all I want to do. I want to spend every minute of the day that I can writing these stories and you know, putting them out into the world like dandelion fluff, you know? So that kind of was the catalyst I needed, I guess, to really push me to make the change.
Okay. So what has been the challenges, though, in your writing, like, to start out writing, and I get what you say when you have all these stories in your head, and then you change from one career and all of a sudden you're writing. So what kind of challenges has it been from coming from a career to becoming a writer? Which, not to say that writing is not a career, but it is a difficult one.
Yeah, it's for the love of it. I think I've gone through so many different challenges, probably, you know, just the fear of starting it and then the dedication it takes to continue on with it, you know, during the hard times. And also, you know, the learning curve, there's so much to learn and to take on in order to be, you know, be a quality writer and do all the things that, you know, need to be done. But also, like, the business side of it is also a difficult part of it as well that I didn't totally anticipate, you know, when I was, you know, thinking of writing stories, you know, that kind of came along with the whole package. Mostly I think for me is just detaching from the outcome. I think, you know, when I'm grounded in myself and I think about the kind of writer I want to be and the stories I want to tell, it really is all about putting, you know, a piece of my heart out into the world. And I think when I'm in that space, that's where the magic happens. And after that, I have to let go of the outcome. And you know what I mean? I have to just trust the process and let it go to a certain extent. Because, I mean, I believe if you feel called to write, then there's somebody else who needs to hear what you're writing. They need to read it.
Right.
So even if it's just one person, right, like that kind of keeps me going. And obviously I hope, like, the world, you know, reads and loves everything I have to say. I mean, unreasonable as that is, right? But I think when I keep grounded and just trying to make a connection, you know, with one reader, that's sort of, you know, what brings me the joy and the passion to do it. So keeping that as my mission statement, right? That's kind of the challenge, to stay there and not get bogged down by all the difficulties or the side, you know, journeys or the doubts or outcomes and all of that.
Well, I do. I love what you say about letting it go, too. Just, you know, trusting the process and then being able to let it go. I think that probably is difficult part at the end of a story, or when you think, or, you know, you're like, when is the end of the book? Or I'm always interested when people can write series, you know, what makes them believe it's going to be a series. But I do like the part about letting it go, because sometimes it is very hard to let it go. Okay. It's hard to let it go. It's hard to publish it. It's hard to put it out there. So I do love that aspect of you saying that being able to let it go is a huge thing. It really is a huge thing.
Yeah. Parenting.
Oh, yeah. That's true, right?
I mean, it's your baby, right? It's hard to be a parent, and then it's hard to put them out in the world and trust that they're going to be okay, and you did enough.
Oh, that's so true. That is very, very true. Or like I told my 13-year-old, my granddaughter, I love that she said to me one day that she wants to try everything She doesn't want to just say, I like this and not try everything. So recently my daughter took her to a classical music concert and they dressed up and she loved it. You know, she was telling me she's ready to go do, she wants to see ballet and she wants to see opera. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a child of my heart. And, but it was funny because her mom says to me one day, she goes, Jale's up washing dishes and cleaning the house. I mean, she goes, Mom, she's actually washing dishes. She didn't put them in the dishwasher. And she's telling me she's cleaning up the house. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, okay, well, either be happy or be very afraid of what she's going to ask you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I like to, yeah, but I sending her a copy of your book. Because this is something that I'm sure she would love. She loves mysteries. And I wanted her, I said, hey, this is really a good book. I think you should really read it. And we always have great conversations after she reads the books that I send. So I'll be interested in her, you know, in her thing. But tell me, what would be the challenging part for you in writing? I know it's kind of easy to write like a, you know, girl characters. How difficult is it for you when you were trying to write the character for, you know, for a guy or a teen guy?
You know, that's a really good question. I think I shy away from having a male protagonist for that reason because I fear that I won't be able to do it justice. But
yeah.
I feel like once you like get to know, I mean, for me, like when I get to know the characters, they're kind of based on, you know, so many different boys and men that I've known in my life, and there's like a little piece of each of them in there, and I feel like it sort of comes together like this patchwork quilt and forms like an entirely new human to me. So I feel like once I'm into that space, they're just so real to me that it just feels right, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's always a challenge for me. I get that question. I know how like a lot of people have different ways of dealing with it. But for me, I basically create an entire human and then they're real to me and then that's that.
Okay.
So then I just go from there.
So does
but, you know,
the
it's funny actually.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just, you know, was thinking about what you just said about, you know, talking with your daughter about the book afterwards. And I just want to tell you that means so much to me because, you know, part of Fine and the reason I wrote it the way I did was in order to kind of start conversations. You know, some of the other things I've written and that I'm going to publish are a little, they're a whole different kind of breed, I guess. But Fine, what I love about it is it's begging to be talked about. You know what I mean?
You'll see what
I mean when you finish it. It's like it's begging to have a conversation about it. Like there's going to be a lot of feelings and a lot of questions and confusion and differing points. And I love that idea. So I just love that you said that because I can just imagine the conversation happening afterwards. And that's like exactly I had hoped would happen.
Well, you know, I'm very impressed with my granddaughter because we have these great conversations about movies and just different things. But this is the best part of being a grandmother. You get to have the best conversations. I think it's like, I don't know. It's just really weird. We really have really good conversations and she asked me these great questions. And so I'm excited with this book. We've talked about some other books, and we've even talked about her own. She's experimenting with writing as well. So I'm gonna tell you, just like when you're writing this book, I do love the world of teens. I love talking to teens. Okay, I just love to know what's in their head.
Right.
So I had an amazing time, you know, with my kids, raising my kids. It was, you know, it was really very cool. And, you know, and I'm a mother that just says anything and just talks about anything. So a lot of times they would just say, Mom, you're not allowed to talk today. So so this is going to be a great conversation. Yeah. So I want to know, does writing energize you or exhaust you? Because when you're talking about, you know, you're talking about wanting to give more in your writing to those who are, out there, you know, who are waiting to read your book or who will be drawn to your books. So does that exhaust you? Because, I mean, there has to be a component that you really want to get to them, give to them. And that could be exhausting sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I feel like most of the time when I'm like making that first draft, I'm so excited that it's just like this, you know, like this pulsing energy, and I love it.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for me to pull away once I'm in that zone. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, and it's just so invigorating. But then I feel like as it goes on, that's when like the fatigue comes in, because you're really trying to, you know, squeeze everything into the most, you know, impactful and efficient and perfect form. And that can be really hard, because, you know, with every like edit, it's like a piece of them dies. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like every page that doesn't make sense to the story, that you're like, but that was so beautiful and that was so important, or, you know, I really felt that part when that happened and now it's gone. It's, you know. And so like that, when that phase comes along, then I start getting tired, and then, you know, it just takes a long time to obviously go through the whole process, right? Like it, you know, the first draft is fun. The second one is pretty fun. After that, I'm like, now it hurts, you know?
That's right.
Right? So I definitely get tired as the process goes on. And that's why I always have like other ideas percolating in the background to kind of keep me happy. That way, if I can write a couple paragraphs about some idea, right? Yeah. It's almost like a false sense of excitement again, and then I'm re-energizing.
Well, have you ever gotten, you know, just reader's block, writer's block, going through those drafts and the manuscripts?
Oh yeah, definitely. And it was funny, because when I first started writing Fine, it actually was only from the older sister Anna's perspective. And then, you know, as I wrote it, I realized, oh my gosh, there's a whole another level of this story that needs to be told. Because, you know, so often like there are stories about, you know, kids that go missing or things that go wrong, but then what about the aftermath? You know, what happens afterwards, right? Like, what happens to people left behind, right? And that just, and I knew I had to write that, but then figuring out how to do it and how to kind of interweave those two narratives was a tough one. Like, that took me, that was a lot of writer's block right there. It took me a while.
Yeah, when I was reading it, I was kind of wondering, and in the beginning, the part where we're talking about how the mother just moves on. It was really interesting the way you said how she was moving on. It was not like, when you see things when someone's been missing, or, you know, it was just, you know, she's getting back into her life. But it wasn't like it was getting back in your life. I'm trying not to tell the whole story, but it was kind of like she was wanting to date again. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. Not weird, but it was kind of like it was not something you would expect a mom to put first place. You know what I'm saying? So I could relate to the sister, but I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But then it was interesting because it's like, okay, I want to know why the mom's like that. I felt like it was making a little bit of a point, like, you know, people do carry on in different ways. They grieve in different ways. And that was her way of grieving, was just that this is the best way for me to jump into moving on with my life.
Sure. And that's the thing about, you know, tragic moments in our lives. None of us have a handbook, right? There's no instruction manual for, wow, some huge bomb just detonated in my life. Now what? Clearly the next step is to do A, B, and C, right? Like, we all just scramble and take the tools we have, or, you know, live despite the fact that we don't have the right tools, and we just kind of fumble through it, right? We carry on. And I think carrying on and surviving moments, you know, it's not always textbook. It's not always beautiful. It doesn't always look the way you, you know, in hindsight would have wished it would have looked like. And so I think it's, mm-hmm, it was important mm-hmm. to me to sort of paint a more realistic picture of what happens. I mean, not obviously to everybody, because these are specific characters and their specific, you know, reactions. But I feel like it's important to really not fall into an expected way of handling things, because really there are none. I mean, anybody who's grieved over any crazy situation knows that it's messy and it looks insane. And from the outside, you know, looking in, you might look one way, it might look another way, but you really don't know what's going on inside of a person's heart, you know, and it has right. to have room mm-hmm. to sort of sort itself out over time and work itself out and allow the person to sort of transform and grow through it. So, yeah, that's a perfect example, you know, is Katie and Anna's mother. Like, she was not, you know, exactly prepared for this to happen, and so her reaction in the moment is what it was.
Right.
For good or for bad.
Right.
You know, for good yeah. or for bad, it was what it was.
Who were some of your favorite writers growing up?
So I love Beverly Cleary, and probably like everybody else. But I really loved all the classics like Louise May Alcott and the Bronte sisters. I was a nerd. Yeah. I loved the story so much.
Right? Uh-huh,
but, yeah, and I liked Katherine Patterson, like The Great Gilly Hopkins. I love that book. But mm-hmm. like everybody, I don't know if I even have any particular favorites, because I feel like there's so many different voices that speak to me. You know, it's hard to really pick one.
Right.
But I think when I'm pressed, I do always say Anne Frank, because for some reason, The Diary of Anne Frank was so powerful to me when I first read it, and even in recent years when I've read it again, I'm just always struck by the fact that this young girl just, you know, wrote her heart out during this incredibly terrible moment in history and in her personal life, and she just shines
right.
like this beautiful, like, just, she just shines
right.
and I'm always, wow, you know, if I could be Anne Frank, if I could just live my life
yeah.
like that and manage to manage to sparkle my way through no matter what's going on, just, you know,
mm-hmm.
have a grasp on my person the way she did at that young age, I just think is beautiful.
Right.
Like, it's so beautiful.
Right.
So I don't know.
Do you think you'll stay in this genre for young adults and mystery? Do you think you'll stay in it? Or are you kind of thinking there's some other, you know, books that you may write?
I think in the short term, I'm going to stay in it, because I just have so many books kind of in various stages of completion,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to see all those through to their graduation. And then
mm-hmm.
after that, yeah, I have a lot of other stories too, and I think there'll be time down the road to focus on those, hopefully. And
mm-hmm.
so I just feel like you need to tell the story, you know, and right now mm-hmm. I feel like there's so many stories that resonated with that kind of young protagonist in that age group, that I want to tell
mm-hmm.
all those and then just let kind of things evolve, you know? I'm open.
Right. So how much research did you put into writing Fine?
I put a lot of research in. I did a lot of research into, you know, all the various, I mean, as you read through the book, it does touch upon a lot of different issues, and I wanted to be really
mm-hmm.
genuine and authentic about those and make sure the way it was handled within the story was, you know, that it rang true, you know, that it didn't,
right.
You know, there's nothing worse than when you have really deep personal experience with something and then you read or a book or you watch a movie and then they handle that particular issue in an entirely foreign way to you. So
right.
I really was conscious about not wanting to do that. I didn't want it to come off, you know, like I had no idea about this and I was just, you know, typing the words. I wanted it to feel more genuine. So I did a lot of research,
right.
but which was good. It was also, it was hard, but it was good.
So did the publishing process change the process of how you write, or what did you find challenging about publishing your book, and did you self-publish?
Yeah, I did self-publish. I went to the traditional publishing route before I was sick, and then, and I had an agent and was moving along, but then when I got sick, I just, you know, had to take a step back. And then when I came out and decided, you know, because I was sort of feeling it out. I wasn't quite sure, you know, where this was all heading necessarily. And then after, you know, I was sick and I was better and I was like, that's it. I want to take this all the way and I want to handle it myself. So it was really interesting and really informative going through every single step of the process of self-publishing because, I mean, from the cover art to the design layout to, you know, all of the editing, you know, elements. There was just so much to it that I feel like it was a really good crash course for me to just, like, fully understand the entire world of publishing. So as I go forward, you know, depending on what happens, like, I feel like it was a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the things is I always ask a lot of writers is how supportive is your family about your writing?
Oh, yeah. They have to be very supportive, don't they? My husband is absolutely a gem. He has been supportive from the beginning and does, you know, everything he can to carve out, you know, enough time for me to focus because, as you know, having three kids, right? Like, that's impossible.
Yeah.
especially during a pandemic, I'll tell you that. That was a very crazy year. And having everybody at home working and doing school, it was not easy. And he's just been really supportive. And all three of my kids as well, they've been, you know, my biggest champions. I think that's really kind of a cool thing to see. You know, and for them to go on this journey with me and see that you can, you know, you can pivot in life and you can change direction and try new things, even, you know, at my age. It's not like you have to graduate high school and get out into the world and pick one thing for the rest of your life. You can evolve and change and grow and try new things. Like your granddaughter said, you got to try a lot of things. So, yeah, they've been really supportive and I'm grateful.
That's great because it's really interesting how, you know, when you were saying that, you know, God, nowadays, does anybody still work like 20 years on a job and then retire? It's like, I don't know anyone yet.
It's true.
You know, yeah, it's like people are, and I mean, and I love it. Even, you know, people, like you said, your age and my age, it's kind of like, they're off doing things that like, and they're just loving their life. And I'm thinking that, oh my gosh. And my brother always says to me, he goes, oh, you know, I'm too old for that. I'm like, dude, you're like in your prime. I always have to say that.
Right.
Because I'm like, dude, you're in your prime. Okay. So yeah, it's really interesting.
So
but I was reading your blog.
True. Yeah.
I was reading your blog. So I want to ask you this question because I was reading this one blog that you wrote, and one of the things I thought was interesting is you said, I wonder how many of us ask ourselves, is that right for me? Is it really and truly what I want to experience? So just what we were talking about. So what would you tell your younger self? Before you got married, before you had kids, before you became a lawyer, before you went to law school, what would you say to yourself about your future?
Man, I don't think we have enough time. No. I feel like there's so many things I would say. You know what, actually, I think it could probably be summed up very simply, and I think it would be that, you know, the whole goal to me of this life, the, you know, big overarching goal is to live a fulfilling life. And and I wish I would have known and been able to tell myself back then that I already had everything I needed inside of me to accomplish that. You know, like I didn't have to go through this world searching for certain, you know, accolades or experiences or education or awards or, you know, just all the different things you think make up a life, right? Whether it's your career or your family or your house or your car, whatever it is. Like, all these are goals, are small goals, but, like, overall, like, I already had everything I needed to live an amazing life. And I wish I would have realized that, like, from the beginning, because I would have made so many more brave choices, right? I would have risked more. I would have been... Right? I would have been more open to try things and not get so hung up on, but this is how you're supposed to do things, or this is what one does if they want to have a happy life, right? You have to do these things.
Right.
And Right. And I just, especially, you know, after going through all the different experiences thus far, I feel like the world really is your oyster. And it's such an amazing, like, it's such an amazing thing to be alive and just to be a part of this crazy circus we're in, and to, you know, get to choose so many of the experiences and survive the other experiences that we don't want, you know, like it's,
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Just, you're so capable, right? And you're so capable.
Right?
You don't know that when you're young, right? You don't know how strong and resilient and perfect you are until, you know, you live a long time and you look back and you go, oh, wow, look at that. Look at that. That
right?
I'm spectacular. How did I not know this before? Like this is
awesome.
This is fun. This could be good. Yeah, I think that would probably be like the overarching advice, because everything else is just details after that, you know?
Right. And I loved it, what you said in there. You had spoiler alert. No one has all the answers. I love that. I really love that. you learn that as you get older. You're like, you know what? No one really has all the answers.
No. I know, but they trick you because they're like, you know, here's the 5 easy steps to get whatever it is you're looking for. And you're like, I got this. I can do 5 steps. And I'm on my way.
Right.
I'm like making, I got my post-it notes. I got my gel pens. I'm like, let's do this. I am on this. And then you're like, oh, it's not that easy? Oh, that works for you, but not necessarily for me. Okay, cool. That's
right.
That's really, really disappointing. You didn't have the answers for me is what happened. You had the answers for you, but now you set me up to go find my own, and that's just defeating.
Yep. that is awesome. So, what do you think
it's
your
true,
next project
true.
Is going to be?
I'm working on another YA book. It's more of like a dramatized kind of coming of age story, and I'm really excited about it because it's about a young girl who's adopted and who is looking to meet her birth mother. And so the story is kind of about her process of going through, you know, all the emotions and, you know, pros and cons and the crazy journey that's going to be. So I'm really excited about it. It's coming soon. I'm just still kind of in that, you know, editing phase and working all that quirks out. So hopefully that'll come out soon.
Well, I do like that. I do like this new project you're having, and fine. These are two subjects that I probably don't see a lot that's being dealt with in the world of young adults. So I do like that. I do like the fact that you're writing some for real stuff. I mean, just real things it's really always interesting. I tell you, I'm glad I didn't raise my kids now. I'm so glad, because it's so many things that you just, you know, it's so many things that you have to remember. There's so many things differently that's happening in their world every day, you know, and it's just so many things as a parent that you have to keep up with. So I'm just like,
isn't that the truth?
Right.
It's true.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I only take comfort in the fact that, you know, we've been being humans for a really long time. And although the stakes have changed and, you know, the world looks different and technology has completely, you know, changed things, I just take a lot of comfort in the fact that we're still human beings having this crazy experience together. And, you know, if they did it all these generations ago, then we're just going to keep doing it and figuring it out along the way, just like they did. Right.
Yep.
Are you watching Hamilton the other night? You know, like everybody's, you know, obsessed with Hamilton still. At least my daughter's still obsessed. I don't know if that's ever going to end. But she, we were watching the other night and I thought, gosh, you know, you forget. I mean, that, you know, the opening scene, he's 19 years old. He's, you know, an orphan sent off to this new world. And then look what he did. I mean, he was making it up on the go too. So, you know, like we've all been in the same boat, I guess. It just looks different every generation, but it's the same thing. We're all just fumbling through it together, hoping for the best, you know?
Yeah, you know what? You're right about that. You know, I mean, it's very true when they said that really there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, you can find something to relate to no matter how far in the past you go or in the present. So, and like I said, I like what you said, and no one has all the answers.
Yeah, don't let them tell you otherwise, because you spend a lot of time looking for it, only to come to the same place, right? We all have to take our same journey and be like, oh, man, you didn't have my answers. God. Terrible, I tell you. And, you know, I think it's those multiple choice questions we all go through as we grow up. They teach you there's a finite number of choices, and one of them is the right one, right?
Right.
There's only one right answer, right? Sometimes it's
yes,
two that look like they're right, but one's better, right? So people's mindset, you know, we have is like, okay, I know D is wrong. C doesn't look right, but it could be A or B. I wonder which one's going to work. I wonder which one's the right one for me, right?
Right.
And you forget that there's, you know, a whole alphabet of letters out there.
Well, you know what? It's kind of also, too, it's like I always say, you know, to my daughter, I say, yeah, you know, life is like walking down a road. I say you have potholes, you have ditches, you have cracks, you have, I said, just make sure if you fall in the ditch, you get back up. You don't stay in the ditch too long, you know. But it's you know, talking to you, it's really, you know, enlightening to us, because when you really think about it, you could have been anything, you know. But you were right. When we were growing up, it's like, yeah, you do like this and you stay here. You don't go too far to the left. You don't go too far for the right. If you do, we're going to all be looking at you really crazy, you know, or you'll, you know, my mom used to say to me, she goes, well, you may be a good writer, but you can't write letters. And I used to say, but mom, I'm going to hire someone to write my letters.
Hey, you're a genius. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. That's so true. It's so true. And now, you know, we always talk about spelling because my kids are always saying, but it spell checks it for me. I don't need to know how to spell that word.
Oh, my God.
You know, you do have a point. And my husband has the best story because he always reminds me, and he goes, you know, when I was taking math when I was a kid, the teacher used to always say, you know what, when you grow up, you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket every day. So you're going to need to memorize these facts. And then he pulls out his phone and he's like, how little did he know that we would walk around with phones that can calculate things at any time of day? And we don't even have to type it in now. We just speak to our phones and say, tell me what 4 times 4 is. And it gives me the answer. He's like, you just never know what their world, right? You never know what their world is like. So you just, I think you gave the best advice ever. Watch out for the ditches and the potholes. And when you ultimately fall in one, just get back up and keep going. Right? Like, you can do this. You got it. I mean, that's the best advice ever.
Right. So in your experience as a writer, because you have one book you published, and I know you learned so many things from that, and what advice would you give to an up-and-coming writer that you think was maybe probably the best thing you learned from being a writer?
That's hard. There's so much good advice. I feel like the best thing that I've learned, and I've heard it from different people, so I don't even know who to credit for this, which is a shame, but I feel like the best advice is to write what you know is true, and not necessarily in a factual sense of, you know, if you're writing fantasy or sci-fi or whatever, obviously that's a little different, but you know, there's like a certain truth to our shared humanity and experiences, and when you write from that place of what you know to be true, I feel like it resonates with people just magically. It's like that energy flows through your words into someone else's soul, and it just it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, you know, whatever it is in your mind you think it has to be grammatically and following all the great, you know, writers that have come before you. I feel like when you write what's true to you, you can always edit it and polish it and make it better, but you can't replace that initial spark of genuine, like, expression, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, as an up-and-coming writer, I feel like we all are so nervous, right? We want to do it the right way. We want to learn how to be effective and create stories that are well-rounded and great characters, and the plot needs to go in this this perfect, you know, sequence, and you get so caught up in the nuts and bolts of it that you forget that the real heart of storytelling is connecting with other people, you know? And mm-hmm. I feel like there right. are a lot of readers who will forgive a lot of things if you connect with them. And like I said, there's mm-hmm. so many genius editors and people who can really shine up your work, and you can learn more about the semantics and the nuts and bolts of it later. But to get that expression mm-hmm. out, I think is what it's all about. So if you like, I think the best advice ever was just to stay true to that. Stay true to what you're trying to create. And then the rest of it will take care of itself. You will learn, you know, all the parts of the story and the character development, and you can improve, but you can't improve that. It has to come from your soul.
I like that, Amy Lee. Thank you. One of the last, before I get the last question, how can we find you and your books?
Well, Fine is available wherever books are sold. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you can also get it through my website. My website is my name, just amyleemurphy.com, and I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. I am often on Instagram the most, so feel free to reach out. I would love to hear from anyone and everyone.
Okay, great. And my last question is, you know, is there anything you'd like to leave us as far as maybe what do you want readers to get from your book?
Yeah, I think I would love, like I said earlier, that, you know, for readers to kind of immerse themselves into the story of Fine and then emerge from it with a conversation, because I feel like okay. it kind of opens up this conversation of so many things that we need to be talking about to each other, you know, even just mm-hmm. internally to ourselves, and not just to parents and other adults like teachers and things, but like among ourselves. I feel like there's so many conversations we could be having and we should be having to understand ourselves better and to make our worlds better. And mm-hmm. I really hope that readers take away from Fine this idea that, you know, if they're angry at the end of it, or if they're hopeful at the end of it, or whatever the response is, I hope they talk about it, because that's the whole point, is to provoke, you know, thoughts and feelings and put them out into, you know, into our world so that we can start making sense of them together. So that's mm-hmm. kind of what I hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Amy Lee, thank you for being a guest on A Taste of Ink. I have enjoyed our conversation. I'm looking forward to finishing with the book Fine. And I'm looking forward that, you know, on your next endeavor, I would love to have you on the show again to talk about your next book when you're finished with it.
Oh, thank you. I would love to come back. This has been a joy. Thank you.
Yeah. So everyone, thank you again for being here and listening to our conversation with Amy Lee Murphy. And if you're out there, you want to go to Amazon or wherever you purchase books, and you want to get her new book, her first book, Fine. It's a great read, and I hope you're really just hoping to look forward for you guys to get that book. This has been A Taste of Ink Live. This is your host, Celeste Duckworth, and thank you for being a part of our program. Bye.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, Celeste Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalwithak.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.